shall my spirit sing.
This is your listener-supported Christian radio station, WCNO 89.9 FM, Palm City.
Actually, that was the first time they had made any criticism of anything transgender. They were the most pro-trans, pro-LGBTQ presidency in memory.
Well, let me ask you this, though.
Yeah.
Remember what you were going to say.
Yeah.
Is that, okay, so I'm befuddled that people can do what they do and all this stuff. And I remember seeing this young lady recently. She's on TV crying. And she said, I was confused about my gender.
Yeah.
Now they've taken off her little young breasts.
Yeah.
She's now maybe 19 or 20.
Yeah.
Her life, as she feels, is ruined. Now, and secondly, you know, I remember seeing President Biden on TV, and he was always petting the children. Remember before that went down, before he was accused?
Yeah.
And nicely. And I think maybe I'm thinking, you know, because I was thinking, oh, it's so grandfatherly, loving. But you know what? If you had a child and you were standing in front of me for a group photo, as we caught Biden, if I started to, you know, I could see touching my own granddaughter or someone who's close to me. But let's say you're there and I start to whisper in her ear and rub her hair. It just was over the top. It seems like, you know what I mean? And so in other words, what I'm thinking of, let's say Biden's one of these people. Okay. He may not be, but let's say he is. So they actually don't see the evil in it. They actually think that they're, I guess, kind and loving people. They're so deluded or blinded by the devil himself.
Well, I think the important thing, aside from anything about Biden's interactions with those young people, the important thing to understand about the current left-wing Democratic mind is that they see all of these transgender issues through the lens of civil rights. So it's sort of psychologically in the same vein of Martin Luther King and, you know, the Selma Bridge, people who cross the bridge, the lunch counters, the sit-ins, the freedom riders. That's how they think about this, because they are on this progressive arc of ever increasing civil rights victories. That's kind of the track they're walking on. And so they can't break out of that. That's sort of the single prism, as Christopher Rupo put it, through which they're looking at this.
You know, at the same time, I've been watching. I'm in the throes of being addicted right now to the new Abraham Lincoln documentary, PBS. It's available on Netflix. I almost didn't watch it because I'd seen so many motion pictures on Lincoln. I thought, oh, this is another one. I have to say this. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's so much superior to what Spielberg did.
Yeah,
this is so well executed. Well, I feel that just like he was fighting real evil, I feel that, you know, guys like you are like, you know, this is like civil war among humanity and non-humanity.
It's pretty brutal. And I'll just continue. I mean, just to underscore the point I was making, even during the recent court oral arguments for U.S. versus Scrimeti, which, as you know, probably read, was Tennessee's law that was being contested at the U.S. Supreme Court that had banned puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries on children in Tennessee. This was in December when oral arguments were given, and then in June.
What is a puberty blocker? What is that?
The puberty blockers are drugs like Lupron or Triptorelin that halt the natural pubertal processes in children that they use sometimes for precocious puberty, a medical condition, but they use it in gender-confused children in order to halt the development of their bodies so that they can then drug them further to make them look like the opposite sex.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. So but one of the justices, liberal justices, Ketanji Brown Jackson, actually compared Tennessee's law banning these medical procedures to a law that, you know, 1967 interracial marriage bans. And so Loving versus Virginia was the 1967 case at the Supreme Court, which overturned mixed race marriage bans. And so, but that's, like I say, that single prism. They see all of these LGBTQ plus issues in the same vein as black civil rights. That's where it sort of occupies that space in their mind. To return to what I was saying about Alabama, that morning of the debate when Biden fell apart and ultimately exited the presidential race, that his administration put out a statement saying they didn't support gender surgeries on minors.
Yeah.
And I thought that maybe that was because President Trump was going to bring it up at the debate that night and say, try to give Biden a hard time about it. And so was he saying out a statement to try to get ahead of the issue in light of President Trump possibly bringing up? Now, President Trump didn't bring it up that night. He didn't have to. And so the more likely outcome was that they were trying to respond to Rachel Levine, who it had been exposed that week, that he was arguing against age restrictions for any of these transgender medical procedures and that kind of thing. But that actually did end up, it did end up being a consequential issue in the election. And ever since, that time, we've seen a slew of actions from federal agencies. Some funding's been stripped and gender clinics are starting to close. But the Alabama case was really just so important. And that's the subject of this second installment of the fifth season of our documentary podcast, because what they were able to do was expose the corruption within the transgender activist spaces that have taken over all of our institutions. And with respect to the pedophilic aspect, it was documented in the Attorney General of Alabama's brief to the Supreme Court in the Scrimeti case, which was about Tennessee's law. They were basically arguing that the high court should side with Tennessee and allow that law banning these procedures to stand, which it did. But in that amicus, they documented what they found during their investigations in their lawsuit that the Biden administration had found out, that they told the story of what they went through in Alabama. And one of the things they cited was the fact that in the development of these transgender activist guidelines that are now used by the American Academy of Pediatrics and all these other groups, is that eunuchs are a type of gender. In the guidelines, they actually call eunuchs a gender. And so where did they get the idea that a eunuch is a type of a gendered person? Well, the answer, if you can believe it, is in a perverse corner of the internet in chat rooms where these fetishistic castration enthusiast men, academics and others, congregate in this sordid website and they swap written pornography that has child abuse and all kinds of perversion, castration as its dominant themes. And those men who are congregating on that filthy website, it has been proven that they were documenting, they were contributing health guidelines and input to the World Professional Association for Transgender Health.
Why do they want castration? That's the removal of the testicles on a boy.
Right. They are obsessed with castration, and it's just kind of one of those unfettered, perverse kind of things. And I fail to understand what it's about. But when you see perverts like that who are, you know, I mean, it gets so much worse, but they actually contributed to the formation of clinical guidelines for gender confused children. And so when you see that, that's not based in science at all. But that was actually documented in the Supreme Court. The Alabama Attorney General actually deposed one of the main writers of those guidelines, and he flat out asked him, if someone comes into your office, I'm paraphrasing, someone comes into your office and they self-declared themselves a eunuch, but they are at no risk for self-castration, is the appropriate course of treatment for them to be physically castrated? And the lead writer of the guidelines responded, that's correct. So they got it from the horse's mouth. Like it's all documented. I'm not a person that typically likes to read amicus briefs to the high court, but Alabama's amicus brief to the Scrimeti case is a barn burner, and I would encourage everyone to read it. I wrote a column about it some months ago. It's jaw-dropping, the kinds of filth and perversion that their attorney general's office, Steve Marshall, was able to uncover, and the dogged attorneys in his office.
That's crazy.
That is told. If you go to generationindoctrination.com, you'll hear the full story of what Alabama did, both from the lawmaker who got their bill passed and then all the journey that took, a plastic surgeon who's been, you know, one of the champions of evidence-based medicine who's been speaking out about this, and Attorney General Steve Marshall himself. I interview all three, and you'll get the full story.
Wow. Now, Pastor John Robbins, are you taking all this in? Are you following it? You find it overwhelming like I do?
Sadly, I don't find it overwhelming. I think that, you know, evil is such that there's really no bounds to it. And of course, Jesus says, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them of the kingdom of heaven is made of such as these. And so if Jesus sets children apart as absolutely precious and sacred in some ways, that the devil would do everything in his power to try to kill, steal, and destroy children. in one way or another. And of course, we know that this does, it's not just affecting children, but really, I think that they are the target in this whole thing. So it doesn't surprise me, sadly. It doesn't surprise me. And I've although I haven't heard Brandon's podcast, I certainly will go to it as soon as I can. I've heard many reports of this kind of thing. And of course, they're so quickly written off as conspiracy theories. But, you know, over time, over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, we've heard so many conspiracy theories that have ultimately proven to be true.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
You can't help but question a lot of what you're hearing in the scientific community. And so anyway, I think the scientific community has been deeply damaged, you know, over the past 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, this is just, it's like Doolin Dalton said this morning when he used the word disturbing. And I was like, yes, that's the appropriate word. It disturbed me so much that that's why I invited you to come in and co-host at the last minute. Thank you, because I'm just befuddled over this. It's just, I go, no wonder God in Genesis said that he repented of having made man.
Yeah, but yeah, and I get it, Rhett, and yet being in ministry, I've seen some very evil things. I've seen the demonic at work, and once you've had a personal experience, personal encounter with the demonic, you know that anything is possible. And so as awful as this all sounds, in some ways it sounds very consistent to me with how the demonic works.
How is your newspaper handling all this? Are they in your corner, you know, allowing you carte blanche on all this stuff?
They have been, my editors have been wonderful. They've stood behind me the entire time. I'm not the only reporter that has gone after this. All of our colleagues are very good on these issues. They understand the biblical view of sexuality, gender, how we are made, creation, Genesis 1. Those are our core values, and so that really does help. I do know of other journalists, though, that have had a very hard time, who they see the same things that we see, even if they're not Christians, and the ideological capture of their newsrooms does not allow criticism to get through to the public. I mean, it's very... One of the reasons this has gone on for so long is that the mainstream press has been the sort of the phalanx, protective phalanx around.
Yes.
I mean, the gender industry, as I sometimes call it. We would not be seeing girls as young as 12 and 13 have their breasts cut off had the media done their jobs and actually reported this, because, in fact, they lie and they run interference.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is a new day.
We'd like to thank Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie for sponsoring It's a New Day. We'd also like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon, Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting us.
You stood before creation, eternity. You spoke the earth into motion, my soul now to stand. You stood before my failures and carried the cross for my shame. My sin weighed upon your shoulders. My soul now to stand. So what can I say? And what can I?